All right, Alexander, let's talk about what is happening with Project Ukraine. And we have a letter from Zelensky to U.S. President Trump, where Zelensky is begging for Patriot interceptors. And the word begging, pleading, it's not my words. These are the words coming from Collective West media outlets. An interesting use of words by the mainstream media, by Zelensky, and an interesting story, an admission that Ukraine has been demilitarized. No more air defense around Kiev, and this is causing a panic. The United States, I don't know where the United States is going to find interceptors, to be quite honest, or the Europeans. I imagine they're going to have to take interceptors, which are in use, protecting Europe or the United States, and they're going to have to give those to Ukraine. Will they do such a thing? Who knows? But my thinking is that when it comes to the United States, any Patriot systems or interceptors will be prioritized for the Middle East and for Israel. They will not be sent to Ukraine. So I guess we're going to be looking at the Europeans having to give up equipment, having to give up air defense, which is probably being used to protect Europe or European capitals and critical infrastructure. So that's the situation. The tide is turning, they've been telling us, Alexander. Ukraine is winning, and from one strike into Kiev, this is the result. One strike into Kiev, and now we have this panic and this admission that that Ukraine is short of interceptors, specifically in the capital city. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, I'm going to here express my own view. I don't think there is any chance whatsoever that the United States is going to supply directly any Patriot missile interceptors to Ukraine. I think they are extremely short now of Patriot missile interceptors. The standoff with Iran continues. The United States is apparently in the process of carrying out a major reorganization of its military forces. There are reports that there's a NATO 3 program underway, which I believe, by the way, to be true. The overall plan that the Pentagon has at the moment, and apparently it is getting bipartisan support to a great extent in the United States, is to withdraw military assets from Europe to the extent that is possible and at accelerating speed. In other words, ground forces are going to be increasingly pulled out of Europe. Air forces, fighter jets, are going to be reduced by a third. US submarines are no longer going to participate or take part in NATO issues. It is going to be left entirely or overwhelmingly to the Europeans to provide for their own conventional defense. That, at least, is the current plan. Donald Trump, as is very well known, doesn't particularly like Zelensky anyway. So given all this, the idea that the United States is going to give up precious air defense interceptors at a time when they are critically short to help someone like Zelensky, I think is inconceivable. What is going to happen is exactly what you said. The Europeans are going to be put under enormous pressure to give to Ukraine what Patriot missile interceptors and other missile interceptors they still have. And you can see what's happening. The Europeans talk bravely about increasing weapons production, about a massive rearmament program that they are going to be undertaking. But the pressure now is on. As soon as they produce anything, the pressure is to send it to Ukraine, where, of course, the Russians will destroy it. So that is what is happening. They're not going forward. They're not building up their military forces. They're actually going backward. And in fact, a European commissioner, I forget which name, actually came out and said yesterday that at this particular critical moment in time, the priority for Europe is to send everything they've got, everything that's left, to Ukraine. Yeah. So that's what they're going to do.
The defense commissioner. I forgot his name, but exactly. he's the new office that they've created.
The new office that they've created, Lithuanian guy, I believe, a Latvian guy. Exactly. That is the reality. And as you rightly said, one single strike, one statement from the Russian foreign ministry, one telephone conversation between Lavrov and Rubio, and we can already see that the whole narrative about the war being in stalemate and Ukraine, the tide turning in Ukraine's favor, is starting to creak.
Yeah, it's all unraveled from one big strike. So the question is, will Russia follow through on this this warning? You mentioned in your video, you phrased it as advice. I think that's the word that you used. Russia's advice to the collective West countries, to the United States, Lavrov, evacuate, because what we're going to do to Kiev, the shift in the conflict is now going to mean that Kiev is going to be targeted, and decision-making centers and military facilities, even in Kiev, will be targets. Do you think that Russia's going to follow through with this? Because it was brought to my attention. I read Simplicius the Thinker's post on Substack, and he did bring up a quote from Peskov, I want to say, where Peskov did seem to downplay the threats or the advice, the warnings that Russia gave to Rubio. And we also had a very prominent MP in Russia also say, no, we're not going to go after decision makers like Zelensky or the Rada or anything like that. What we're really talking about is just underground bunkers where there's military command that is making decisions. I mean, do you think this is going to follow through?
Right. I read Simplicius the Thinker's article, and it's interesting because I actually wrote a piece on X, and it was published some hours ago, but it was actually written before I saw these reports about what Peskov and this Russian MP has said. And in fact, if I can just say, I anticipated it. I think people have misunderstood a little what the Russians are saying. Now, the first thing to say is there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever in my mind that they are going to follow through with what they said they're going to do. One of the things about Putin, and it's a consistent pattern with Putin, is that he often takes a very, very long time to make a decision. But once he takes it, that's it. There's no going back. We saw that, for example, with the special military operation when it started. I can remember in the first weeks after it, Macron, Scholz were phoning him up every day, begging him to stop, begging him to agree a ceasefire, that kind of thing. He said, no way, we're going to achieve all the objectives of the special military operation, no matter what. This is very much Putin's style. He has put his own authority behind this decision that we have just seen. When Lavrov called Rubio, he said specifically, you can see it in the Russian readout, I am acting on President Putin's instructions. This is the warning I am giving you, and I want you to pass it on to Trump. The second part we know because Rubio himself has told us. So I have absolutely no doubt at all that the Russians are indeed going to follow through, and that the decision has been made, and that there are going to be attacks on the decision-making centers in Kiev. But this is not the same thing as a campaign to obliterate the whole of Kiev, which some people are talking about. First of all,
or decapitation strikes,
But first of all, let me talk about Kiev itself. I mean, I think people need to always remember that Kiev is the mother of all Russian cities. It's St. Sophia's Cathedral, the first cathedral built by the Byzantine architects sent there by the emperor from Constantinople. That is in Kiev. It's the first important, it's the mother church, if you like, of the Russian Orthodox Church. There are many other monuments around Kiev, which are very within central Kiev, which are enormously important to the Russians. As was explained to me once by a Russian, destroying Kiev would be destroying our old historic capital. It's not something we're going to do. The Russians have not said that. As for Zelensky himself, as for the Ukrainian political apparatus that supports him, Yermak and, you know, other people like that, the Russians are not going to want to go after them, because Zelensky, and Putin has said this, is the gift that gives on giving. He conducts the war in a certain way. He refuses to give up territory, even a millimeter of territory. He refuses to conduct negotiations with the Russians in good faith. His whole approach to the war is one which enables the Russians to continue to do those things in Ukraine that they want to do. Firstly, to take over the whole of Donbass, then ultimately Zaporozhye and Kherson, and then, as we are increasingly seeing, to move beyond that. What the Russians are going to do, and what they said they are going to do, is two things. Firstly, they are going to attack the major command positions, the bunkers, the military places, the factories which produce the drones, the places from which the drones are guided, the other military places. Now, if you looked at the original foreign ministry's statement, that is what they said they would do. The second thing they want to do, and this is something that people are not getting, is that they want to force the West to leave Kiev. Now, Lavrov said that in his call to Rubio, and Lavrov also said this in an interview. Medvedev has also followed up, and he said the same thing. They want to create conditions in Kiev which will make it impossible for the West to stay. And bear in mind, in February 2022, before the start of the special military operation, the embassies, the Western embassies, did leave Kiev, and they only returned in April 2022 after the Russians withdrew their troops from around Kiev. So the Russians expect, and I think that they are right, that if the heat in Kiev goes too high, the West will indeed leave. And the reason the Russians want the Ukraine, the West, to leave Kiev is because that will isolate Zelensky himself and his political apparatus from the West. It will mean that Zelensky is not in constant contact with the Western embassies. It'll mean that the military people, the people who fund the NGOs, you know, the Western people who fund the NGOs and who manage the funds, the people who are there in every command bunker providing the intelligence, coordinating operations with the Ukrainians, they will have to leave Kiev. So then you will have a situation in Kiev where Kiev itself has been bombarded, and with the collapse of air defense, we're not only going to see over time, I suspect, missiles and Oreshniks coming in. We're quite likely going to start to see fighter jets carrying FAM bombs. They could also start to strike Kiev too. Kiev is well within range. The reason the Russians haven't sent fighter jets to Kiev is because until recently, Kiev has had strong air defenses. So what we're going to have is a Kiev that is isolated. Zelensky, who is isolated in Kiev itself, it'll be difficult for him to receive visitors from the West. It'll become more difficult for him to leave Kiev and to travel abroad. The West pushed out. So the link, the direct link between Zelensky and the West will be severed. And at that point, we will have a capital and a government that is increasingly under siege. I think that is what the Russians are working towards.
Okay, that's clear. How will that work? I mean, the trains continue to roll into Kiev from Poland. Richard Blumenthal was just in Kiev the other day. No doubt that he's bringing certain information, certain plans and scheming. There's no doubt about it that he's going to meet with Zelensky and they're going to scheme on something. Something bad is going to happen. Yeah. But you got the trains, you got the officials that continue to pour into Kiev on a daily basis. You have the supply lines from Poland that continue to bring in weapons and supplies into the battlefield. How would that work just by going after certain areas or decision-making centers in and around the city? That's going to be what severs Zelensky from the West. And then you have a Zelensky who is pretty much traveling almost every other day. He's rarely in Kiev, right? Well, he spends maybe a night in Kiev every month or something like that. And he's all over the place. So, I mean, does it really affect Zelensky?
Well, of course, if communications, if transport links between Kiev and the West are broken, and in order to do that, by the way, you would need to attack the railway stations. I mean, that's what would have to happen. And if you go again to the foreign ministry statement, that is possible, because how do the spare parts to make the drones, which is what the Russians are talking about, how do they arrive in Kiev? They arrive by train. They don't come by car. I mean, it's far too impossible to send large numbers of supplies into Kiev by car or by truck. Not this kind of, not for an industrial purpose. And they can't arrive by air. So they would have to reach Ukraine. They'd have to reach Kiev by train. And it is the trains that are the mechanism that Zelensky uses to leave Kiev and to go on his travels, and which people like Richard Blumenthal and Ursula von der Leyen and all of the others who want to visit Kiev, it's trains that they use to reach Kiev as well. So in order to achieve that, you'd have to conduct regular attacks on the railway stations. Now, again, we mustn't assume this is all going to start happening tomorrow. I don't think this is going to be the way this campaign is going to go. I think you're going to have drone strikes, missile strikes. They will not happen every day initially. They will happen periodically, then gradually, and this is very much the Russian style, as this campaign grows, it will all start to tighten. But then, if we have transport links to Kiev becoming disrupted, that puts the burden on Zelensky to make the decision about what he does. Does he stay in Kiev with the risk that he becomes basically trapped there? Or does he stay outside Kiev, continue on his travels, set up some kind of office in Lviv maybe, or somewhere else in Ukraine? In which case, of course, he's losing his grip on his capital. And I think that the Russians don't think he's going to do that.
Okay, so the Russians believe that that Zelensky is going to stay on course, towards the course that he's on already, right?
I think that is the Russian calculation.
That is the plan.
I think they think that he's not going to want to leave Kiev. Right. That if he does leave Kiev, his political position will start to weaken.
Do you mean physically?
So they're basically they're trying to trap him, basically.
Right, but he's rarely in Kiev. Physically, he's rarely in Kiev. But you mean all of the architecture in and around him is not going to leave. Like he's not going to create a government in Lviv.
No. No.
He's not going to take the government and move it to Lviv,
No, I don't think so. And I think
even if the embassies go there?
Even if the embassies go there. Because, of course, if they do that, if they leave, if the entire government leaves Kiev, then Kiev becomes, well, first of all, I think at that point, a lot of the population will also leave. And at that point, at that stage, Kiev begins to become a ghost city. And a city under siege. And Zelensky himself moves further away from eastern Ukraine, from the battlefields. He becomes a more remote figure. And I think his authority will inevitably at that point start to decline. He will look less like the president of Ukraine. He will look more like the leader of a part of Ukraine who is being propped up by the West and is on Ukraine's western border. And I think that is something that Zelensky himself would not want to see happen.
All right, a final question. Decision-making centers. Are we talking about NATO, US?
Absolutely.
Decision-making centers?
Absolutely. You mean in Europe?
Outside, no, in Ukraine. I mean, I don't think Russia's going to look at Europe yet.
I agree with that. But absolutely, I think that now it's there's no doubt about this. When the Russians give warnings, take your diplomats out because they could find themselves in danger. The Russians are basically saying that from now on, we don't care whether your military people are located in one command bunker or another. We're coming after you. We're coming after it. And if your people are there and they are killed, that's your problem, not ours. No doubt of it. I mean, there has been a major escalation. And I'm going to say something else. We've just had this horrible business in Starobelsk with a dormitory and the students who were killed there. And there's no doubt at all that this has shocked and horrified and deeply angered many people in Russia, including Putin himself. But I suspect that this operation around Kiev, which to be clear, is going to be working through in stages, but I think this has been already in preparation for a very long time. I don't think that this is something that the Russians have just decided to do now.
All right. We will leave the video there, theduran.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram. We also are on Substack, and go to the Duran Shop, pick up some merch. Take care.